Aloha, everybody, and welcome to the Kauai Death Cafe. This is Jennifer, and I'm here with Susan. How are you today, Susan?
I'm okay. I'm weaning myself from high blood pressure medicine, which gave me this really bad cough. So if you hear a really bad cough, it's
you.
It's not terminal. But they say it'll take months to get this medicine out of my system, which made me second guess why I even took my very first pharmaceutical.
You know, that's interesting because blood pressure medicine doesn't really last very long, like the effect of it.
Oh, like 20 minutes after you take it?
No, something like 3 hours.
Oh, right.
So you take it and it really only works for the first 3 hours. And then
you have a cough for 3 months.
Then you have a cough for 3 months.
I'm just blown away. Like I said, this is the first time I was talked into taking something so I don't have a stroke.
A chronic pharmaceutical.
Yeah.
Or daily dose of something. Yeah.
And I was doing it la-di-da. I thought, oh, you're such a good girl.
Well, it seems like something benign to do, you know?
Yeah, everybody I knew was taking it. But
everybody I know is doing it.
Yeah, right.
Blood pressure medicine.
Right, so it's good to know it doesn't last very long. And, you know, if I have to go between a stroke and these pills, I think I'll take a stroke. I'm sorry, folks.
And that is what it means to have autonomy, medical autonomy.
Thank you.
Do what you want.
Really.
There is no right or wrong.
The older you get, the more you look at it different. I mean, this turning 80 just turned everything around.
Yeah.
So
I think that the opinion of the medical profession has changed a little bit with blood pressure medicine and older people. They like you to have higher blood pressure because it makes you feel less tired.
That's one of the things that they say, that it will, your blood pressure will be higher because of the fact that you're older, and it does. And they also changed what is considered high blood pressure.
Ah.
So what used to be like 130s high blood pressure, now they made it to 160 or whatever, so that they're more likely to give you
the meds.
Yeah, which we know is, you know, nothing against the medical profession. They do wonderful, amazing things.
Well, it's all set by means and averages too.
Right, not by individuals.
Not by individuals.
When I went to the doctor about my cough, she never even looked at the thing that said the high blood pressure medicine I take gives you a cough. So it took a nurse friend of mine to say, oh, that stuff, that gives you a cough.
Yeah, and she must see it a lot.
The nurse.
Yeah, in and out of her profession. And she got to spend more time with you than the nurse at the place.
She's my neighbor,
She's your neighbor, yeah. Oh, boy.
All the new things that pop up.
Well, today,
as we age,
we were going to reflect on the topic of hope. And it's a broad word, but we came up with the topic because it's a conversation that Susan and I commonly have about hope. She doesn't like hope. So what do you say?
Well, false hope.
Yeah.
You know, the fact that, I mean, you and I both know people who are just beyond. And instead of being able to come to terms with the fact that, you know, they could have more crazy things from the medical profession, which might give them 20 more minutes, or they can give up the hope and enjoy. So I, you know, hope has its place. And you and I have both, you did a wonderful thing about places where hope is appropriate or is it's okay, as long as it's measured with reality.
Yeah. So we have a little clip that we want to play, and it's from one of these profound thinkers. His name is Stephen Jenkinson, and he discusses the difference between having hope or being hope-free.
Right.
Because having hope leads to becoming hopeless. And well so said. That's his, that's sort of the gist of this conversation. It's a bit wordy, but it's really quite good. So
to me, he's the next generation of Ram Dass and Stephen Levine.
Oh yeah, 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 yeah.
He kind of takes it to the next place.
Yeah.
And he is kind of wordy and not that easy to understand, but he has a few things. I mean, I don't love mm-hmm. everything he says, but he has a few things that have a lot of wisdom to them.
It got me thinking about it in a different direction.
Right, yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
As a... And we kind of decided to do this show a few weeks ago, and so we've been sort of, you know, in production of it, which means that we're thinking about it for the upcoming weeks and what are we going to say on the radio and kind of stuff like that. And so it was interesting to have this reflection during the time that I was working and sort of helping some people go through some thresholds. So I even had a different opinion about hope just last week, you know. So
yeah.
Without further ado, let's listen to Stephen Jenkinson and we'll
Yay.
Come back and talk about what he has to say. Enjoy.
I'd like to talk about hope. And, you know, hope is one of the it seems like it's one of the bedrock values in Western culture. And yeah. many psychologists speak about how important hope is for one's health and well-being.
Sure.
And, you know, it seems like you have a slightly different outlook on hope. So how do you see or understand hope?
You know, our entire talk could have been devoted to this one thing. That's how vast it is. So I have to do it very much in short. But the gist of it is this, you know, it's clear that, you know, I'm on the record now as officially declaring that being hopeful and being hopeless are not two opposites. They're twins. They're very close. Okay. What's the point? My point is both of them depend on hope. Hopeful depends on hope, obviously. But hopeless depends on hope too, just as much. In order to be hopeless, you got to have experimented with hope and found it a failure. See what I'm saying? It still has to be there. So I have an alternative, such as it is. I'm not much of a program guy, but for, you know, at the risk of sounding like I have one in this case, my idea is hope-free, which is not a portion of either one of those two. It just opts out. It says, look, man, I tried being hopeful. It was interesting. It had its moments, you know, but God almighty, it was doomed much more often than not. Okay, so then I tried hopeless. Nobody ever says it that way, but let's say it that way. I tried hopeless, tried it on, fit pretty good, especially after hope didn't work out. The natural thing to do, seemed like the responsible thing to do, seemed like I knew finally what I was doing when I was hopeless. Yeah. Except there's something about hopeless that kept, like it was like the spin cycle that never ended. You know, it didn't turn into anything. Hopeless begets hopeless. That's how it goes. Hopeless seeks out hopeless, right? You make a support group called hopeless. And that's what you trade in every Monday night or whatever it is. So how about this? I tried hopeful. I tried hopeless. They each had their compulsions and their attractions and their uses. That's true. But there was a con, because the idea was everything is either one of those or the other of those. Everything can be understood as either the presence of one of them or the absence of the other. Hope free, on the other hand, hope free says, man, I tried them both. I gave them a fair shot, you know? And something occurred to me that I didn't require hope in order to proceed. I know that's the party line, that you gotta have hope and then people won't finish the sentence. So I would often ask them, you gotta have hope for what? Well, you got to be hopeful. I said, no, finish the sentence. That is a finished sentence from the point of view of being hopeful, isn't it? It has its own reasons, doesn't it? It just works, doesn't it? It's like a sharp-dressed man. It just works. You don't have to elaborate as to why. No, you should. You should try. You got to be hopeful, or else what? or else you'd be hopeless. Baby, if you are a hopeful person, you will be hopeless sooner or later. Isn't that how it goes? You know that's how it goes. And you go back and forth between them, and you call that progress. It's Donkey Kong or whatever. What was that old freaking crazy video game, the early one? Whatever it was. That's what that is. Okay. So I'm saying this. You know, we're in an insanely troubled time. I mean, you can barely keep your wits about you. You pay attention to any kind of news feed, you go out of your mind. So now you look for all kinds of distractions as an antidote to the news feed, and now you go out of your mind, and so on and so on. Okay, so you got to stay hopeful. Really? To do what? What's being hopeful doing for you now? It's a crazy time. It's not an antidote to the crazy time. If you're a real citizen, which is what I'm pleading for now, not an opt-out specialist, a citizen now, that means you're in, right? That means we can count on you for the heavy lifting. Do you got to be hopeful to be a citizen of a troubled time? It sounds like you do until you start wondering about that got to part. Can you do the heavy lifting without hope? Not hopeless, hope free. Can you do the work and not ask to be paid first? Because that's what hope is. Hope says, I got to feel positive about the outcome, or I'm not going to work on behalf of the outcome. That's hope. It doesn't sound hopeful, but that's how hope actually works. Got to be hopeful first. Got to have the upside in view, right? Got to be positive. But wait, we're in the shit. What do you mean we got to be positive? I'm positive we're in the shit. Is that what you mean? No. Positive is an alternative to being in the shit. No, it isn't. It's truancy, right? So how do you occupy your God, if I can use the phrase, your God-given place in the shit? Because we're in it now. By the accident of birth, we're in it. It's never been like this for near as I can tell, right? How confounding it is to keep your bearings and imagine what a properly, deeply well-lived life could possibly be in a time like this. You don't need hope to get your bearings. What you need is a willingness to occupy the fact that you were born to a troubled time. You see, maybe that's not an accident. Maybe that's not what your generation call random. You know, one of the favorite words I keep hearing, random, is like, maybe it's not random that you were born to a troubled time. And maybe it's not punishment either for bad karma. Maybe being born to a troubled time means that the troubles of your times needed the likes of you. Maybe that's what it means. Maybe the troubles of the times stand a chance of being ameliorated because the likes of you were born to them. And if you're willing to take up the citizen's work, maybe the troubles of your times, maybe they take a little bit of a hit for a change. See, that's the plea I make. I'm saying this to you, and I feel a lump in my throat to say it. Okay, speaking of urgency. But I mean this more deeply than I can say. Maybe being born to a time like this is not affliction for us. Maybe it's an assignment. You can undertake that understanding absolutely free of hope. You don't need it to be able to proceed.
Wow.
Absolutely. I don't know if anybody's seen the new Jane Goodall documentary on Netflix. I think it's called Her Last Words, or something about the final words, and it's her final words. And the last thing she says is exactly what he's saying. It's just like, do what you do, and you don't know, you might, you know, whatever you're doing is your purpose. And you might not know what your purpose is, and it might not be clearly defined, but everybody has a purpose, and everybody should follow along and what happens to them. And that's what he's saying, too. It's it's very inspiring. And her final words, I think the final words are, that's what it's called on Netflix, but man, do I highly recommend it.
I was just telling somebody about that today, that I have to watch that.
Oh, you haven't watched it
yet? I haven't watched it yet.
Bad
I've been,
girl.
I know.
It was profound.
I was rewatching the epic of Star Noah. Wars. And Noah. And then we started Dune. So, but gosh, I mean, what he says about hopeful and hopeless being one and the same, because they both depend on hope, you know? I found myself hoping my way through something that I knew was inevitable last week. A friend of mine that we've had on the radio before, Manny, he finally got to a place with his sickness where he couldn't come back. He had some encephalopathy, and he wound up comatose on a Thursday night, and then he passed away the following Thursday night. So I was kind of back and forth from the hospital that week, and, you know, getting him arranged to get to the hospital and things like that. And I was sort of taking inventory of where my hope was in all of this, you know?
Yeah.
Because I know just as well as he does what his diagnosis was, you know? And so I had a willingness to occupy the facts, understanding that, you know, when I got to his house, he was definitely in a coma, and understanding that this is the beginning of the dying process for him, you know? But I still found myself sort of, I don't want to say hoping my way out of it, but I kind of started to understand the evolution of hope.
And he was hopeful. He was looking for anything he could think of doing.
He was, and I think that he finally kind of reached that bargaining stage where he was like, you know, all right, I'll take one treatment. It's not chemo, it's immunotherapy, you know, which is somewhat one in the same. But he also didn't have any other options, and so he was finally coming to the realization that maybe he'll try something, probably just to say he did it.
Yeah, well, that's where the crazy part about hope is, you know, like, oh, well, there's only one thing to do, I guess I'll do it. And the medical profession would totally tell you to do it, whatever.
They gunned for it. And what I was understanding is that when they give people these prospectus of time extensions for taking medication, they're not able to get that quantitative number until you die.
Right.
And so we're going to try to get 3 extra months, not understanding that 3 months was the actual average that a person that takes this medicine could have that extension. And so he'd already been given those 3 months in the beginning of the diagnosis, you know, because they're like, you've got 3 to 6. And
yeah, and whether hope was a positive thing for him,
mm-hmm.
who can say? I mean, I guess for some people, the idea that, I'm going to hope this works and have a couple of extra months, you know, is what they need or want. I mean, you can't, it's so not anything we can determine for anyone else.
Yeah. So when Thursday came around and he finally did die, I wrote something down to sort of understand the revolution of my hope, you know? Or the evolution of it, you know, how it went. So I'd like to share it, because it's kind of, it was interesting to me to sort of see how that evolved for me, given that I thought that I was occupying facts, you know what I mean? Like, I know that this is going to happen. And so then I kind of made an effort to understand how my hope evolved during that week that I knew that he was on his deathbed, and what that sort of look like. So Thursday, Manny died today, 7 days since going to KVMH. His sister called me mid-afternoon, and we met at the hospital for one last goodbye. 7 days ago on last Thursday night, he had a peaceful lapse into agony-free unconsciousness, the final piece of a terminal coma. That's something that Newland wrote, by the way.
Oh.
Which I love that.
And Newland wrote the book, How We Die.
How We Die, yep. a perfect lapse into agony-free unconsciousness, the final piece of a terminal coma. Anyway, he lasted almost 7 full days with no food or water. An article on hope and how hope changed through the process. Number one, he heard from his doctor that he had cancer. He hoped he didn't hear her correctly. He was in denial for 3 months before going back to her and her telling him again, and he hoped it wasn't true. Number two, he acknowledged what she said finally, and he pursued learning more about it in hope that some measures could be taken to prolong the inevitable. Number three, he learned about what stage his cancer was in, and he hoped there was something that could cure it. He hoped the tests would yield a prognosis of treatable. 3.5. Even though he hoped for a solution or a treatment, he also got real and started enjoying his days. He took trips, he shared his love, and he told people how he really felt. He hoped every day his doctor was wrong, and he hoped for tomorrow. Number four, he hoped the treatment would be tolerant, and he hoped that it would work. Number five, the treatment had a side effect that made his liver septic. It affected his brain in a way that made him pretty Lolo. We hoped it was just an imbalance, and we hoped we could get him back. Number six, after 3 days in the hospital, he hoped he wasn't dead. Nothing was familiar to him, and he had no idea where he was after waking from his stupor. Number seven, he hopes he doesn't become a burden. He hopes he didn't do anything unforgivable to anyone else while he was having his imbalance. We hope he can learn to dress himself again. Number eight, he's not waking up. I hope he'll wake up one last time to when I try to wake him up, but he won't respond. I hope I didn't kill him, said his sister, but he was still breathing. He was just in a coma. I hope he doesn't die at this house. I hope that he can go to the hospital. And then the hope really changed. It hoped to, I hope he's comfortable. I hope they don't have to have a siren on the EMS when they get here. I hope he wakes back up one more time. I hope they tell us what's going on. I hope they call if anything changes. I hope his family and friends are okay. I hope he knows he's not a burden. I hope he can hear us. I hope he knows we're proud. I hope he knows we're here. I hope he sends me a sign from the other side to tell me that heaven's real. I hope he's not in pain. I hope he passes swiftly. I hope it's beautiful where he's at. I hope he wasn't afraid. I hope he sees his loved ones there, and I hope he saves a place for me.
Amen, huh?
Yeah.
All the hope, and then he died.
All the hope, and then he died.
Yeah.
But, you know, the hope started to sort of shift from, you know, you hope someone doesn't wake up in that state and become agitated, or you hope they don't wake up and bounce back, and then all of a sudden they're 15 pounds lighter and, you know, really, really frail.
And don't die.
And don't die. Yeah. You know?
Excuse me for
saying
that.
And so you do start hoping that he dies swiftly. And, you know, he was there for 7 days. It wasn't swift.
No.
It wasn't swift.
What do they say? You can only be without water for
three
days?
Mm-hmm.
I've read a lot of things in that. Well, not a lot, but things about how long people survive without food and water after, you know, that was always, oh, that's the quick way out. But it doesn't sound like it.
No, and I think it all of that really depends on your stature as a human. You know, he was quite robust. He had good muscle tone. He was eating up until the, you know, the night that he went into a coma. I thought maybe 5 days, but I wasn't expecting 7.
Yeah, so the bottom line is we don't know.
We don't know.
We don't know nothing.
And it's funny to try to kind of like listen to people kind of try to predict that, but it's just like birth. We really don't know.
You can predict all you want, but then
you have false contractions in birth. Oh, the baby's not actually coming right now.
Yeah.
You know, or whatever. It's the same, but it's different.
It is. It's the other end of the same.
Mm-hmm.
For sure.
Yep. Well, we're going to take a break really quick and pay some bills. You're listening to the Kauai Death Cafe on KKCR. I hope you'll join us after this break. Thank you. Welcome back. You're listening to the Kauai Death Cafe on KKCR. You're in studio with Jenna and Susan. And we were talking about hope. That was Widespread Panic taking us out with some hope in a hopeless world. I think they know Stephen Jenkinson.
Yeah, right.
They probably do, those old codgers.
Are they old guys?
Yeah. Yeah, they were kind of like the new Grateful Dead, or not the new Grateful Dead, but they were the band that everybody started following around when the Dead died. The Grateful died.
Mm-hmm. My first ayahuasca journey, at the very end of it, that's what came to me. I am gratefully dead.
Yeah.
It was like, yeah. Okay, that's it. Play the other Stephen.
Okay, so we have another Stephen Jenkinson, and he's talking to us about the meaning of death. And it subsequently kind of leads to the meaning of life. And so it's an interesting reflection. It's about 5 minutes long, and I hope you enjoy.
I was asked many, many times when I was in the front lines of when the people in Death's Head thought I was a good idea to come and talk about finding meaning at the end of life. That was the standard request. So you can see the idea that meaning is somehow potentially elusive or even fugitive and has to somehow be wrung from the circumstances is behind that question, yeah. It's a particularly modernist dilemma to find meaning. But the real problem is in the conceiving of it as something you have to find. You can hear the language implies that it's hidden, or that you're not looking in the right place, or that there's some nefarious architecture that keeps it from you, or that you understand, or that you have to just claim so-and-so as your own personal savior, you know. But what if meaning's not hidden? What if it's not something to find? What if that's not the story? What if the story is that meaning is not found at all? That it's made? It's made by the willingness to proceed as if certain things must be, like life has to continue. Not you have to continue. That life is not your lifespan, or your children's lifespan, or the lifespan of what you hold dear. How about holding dear the fact that nothing you hold dear lasts? How about holding that close to your bosom? That's making meaning of the end of life, the willingness to do that. It's not hammered into the sky for all to see so that nobody could forget. You see how precarious the whole proposition is, that it actually has to be lived out and told in order to pertain. It had no police. It had no enforcement branch. You know, it just, if you're kind of not willing for it to be so, it probably won't be. And, well, what's the consequence of that? Well, it's not a conjecture. Look around you. It's our way of life is the consequence. Life does not feed life. Life is on the receiving end of life. Always. No, it's death that feeds life. It's the end of life that gives life a chance. It's a hurtful kind of comfort, maybe, that
The dominant culture of North America is in some kind of beginning stage of a terminal swoon. Because it's beginning, it's hard to tell the difference between that and dancing or having a good time, you know. But it's terminal, all right. Meaning there's no turning back from it. There's no undoing it. Alas, it's worse than talking about it as a punishment. It's not a punishment. No more than dying is a punishment for having been born. Our particular dilemma, I think, is trying to live. The realization that what the world requires of humans is not that they piss off already. And why don't you all die? And then we'll go back where we were. No, I think the world whispers, all we need of you is that you be human. That's it. The dilemma is in the meaning of the word human. What has to die is your refusal to die, your refusal for things to end. If that dies, life can be fed by it. And so the plea is not for punishment, it's for remembrance. You're not supposed to feel bad about having forgotten. You're supposed to feel more. You see, that's the invitation.
Oh, you're supposed to feel more. Yeah. Youch. That's been a highlight too. You know, a lot of people aren't used to going through the full range of emotion. You know, you have happy and sad tend to be women. Angry and happy tend to be men, you know. Mm-hmm. So when a man has to be sad, that's really out of the ordinary for them. You know, I know for me, for a long time, it was hard for me to get angry. That was really out of the ordinary for me, you know.
Yeah, our palate for food and for emotions and probably everything is very limited.
Mm-hmm. You know?
Like we only eat a small amount of the foods, the greens available to
yeah.
people.
Yeah.
We only get broccoli and blah, blah, blah.
Right.
And the same thing with emotions. I mean, you're not even supposed to be sad.
Mm-mm.
Someone will tell you, no, don't be sad. Be
they
happy.
Always say that.
Yeah.
And it's oh, like, how are you today? You better say you're happy.
I love to say something vague, but I refuse to say I'm fine because I'm not always fine, you know? It's not...
No, it's actually a bad question to ask somebody.
Right. Unless you really want to know.
It could be really pretty insensitive. Right. You really want to know.
Yeah.
How much time you got?
So what did you think about... the part where he talks about what if meanings are not hidden and what if meaning is made by your willingness to proceed? So building on his earlier conversation, you learn something and it becomes the facts, you know. What is your willingness to proceed with that and how do you do so? And so recently you went to China and you came back and you had read a Pema book, and it had a saying in it. What's the saying?
Om Mani Padme Hum. Well, first of all, mm-hmm. I read, right before I was leaving, a friend told me I needed to read the Tibetan Book of Living and Dying, because I just turned 80 and had this remarkable experience, and was kind of in a fog,
mm-hmm.
Trying to understand it.
And
so I got the Tibetan Book of Living and Dying, listened to it probably three times, and then because I listened on Audible Books says, and based on your listening, you would like to hear. And so Pema Chodron popped up, who I listened to in the 80s and had totally forgotten about it. And I've talked to more people now who said the same thing, like, oh, I remember her from long ago.
Yeah.
Well, anyway... the book, How We Live is How We Die, which is Jenna's favorite phrase.
That's my favorite saying.
Yeah, and I always thought, what are you talking about? How we live is how we die. Mm-hmm. But anyway, this Pema book was profound for me. And the thing that was the most profound was it was her saying, if you just chant, which, and this is not how she said it, this is just my interpretation, the chant Om Mani Padme Om, which she says is not about you at all. It's about sending that prayer to the whole world, that mm-hmm. healing prayer. And so for me, it became a way to put me right into the here and now. Like anytime I had one stupid thought, which I consider all thoughts stupid, mm-hmm. I could just, by the grace of God, just Om Mani Padme Om, like all night if I have to, just to keep me from, you know, thinking things that don't serve anyone.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's been a it's been amazing for me to be able to stop the thinking, because we all know that thinking positive or negative, it's like hope.
Mm-hmm. The part of the Tibetan Book of the Dead that sort of rings in my ear when you talk about this is the part where you talk about suffering and taking on the suffering of the world. If you're already suffering,
yeah, that's the Tonglen.
Breathe in the suffering of the entire world, so that you're not suffering in vain, and breathe it out at the same time.
And that's the Tibetan Tonglen meditation.
Okay.
Where if you're feeling any anxiety, any discomfort, divorce yourself from the thoughts you have about it.
Mm-hmm.
Because when you feel something uncomfortable, you start to think, well, it's this or that or blah, blah, blah.
Right.
And if you cut off the thoughts about feeling you're feeling,
yep.
and realize that there are millions of people on this planet who are feeling that same feeling for way worse reasons than you.
Right.
And so then you get to breathe in that energy, mm-hmm. and breathe out whatever kind of, I don't really have the words, any kind
white
of
light or something. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, without getting corny. It's like mm-hmm. to just be able to breathe out positivity to the whole world, because everybody's suffering. And so that's like it's an amazing Tibetan practice called the Tonglen. And
that saying, when you say the Om Mani Padme Om, reminds me of the Tonglen. Like that, you would breathe in that suffering and breathe out that chant almost. You know?
What Pema said to me, when I read that book, mm-hmm. was this particular chant, if you say this chant, I mean to yourself, you don't have to say it out loud or anything, the last piece of it is that it's sending out healing to the whole wide world, not mm-hmm. just, you know, it's like for me it started because I was having issues with something in my life that were uncomfortable, and I was trying to stop thinking about them.
Mm-hmm.
And then when I listened to her and realized, oh, you can do this for the whole wide world and never mind your own particular little drama, because mm-hmm. we get very caught in our little dramas.
And through doing so, meaning is made, you know?
Yeah, like, I mean, I keep thinking of Jane Goodall.
Yeah.
You know, it's the purpose. Everybody has a purpose. You might not know what it is,
mm-hmm.
but anything you do, you know, advances that purpose. And like he was saying, we just heard something just a minute ago about basically all you can do is what comes to your mind. Mm-hmm. And if you think of it as something that will benefit the world, then why not? Like that whole butterfly thing.
I was just going to say, that's just like, that's the small butterfly wings.
Yeah, if the butterfly flaps his wings in the Amazon, then it changes the weather in New York. And
yeah.
What a concept. So if I Om Mani Padme Om for 2 seconds, maybe I've sent out like a fraction of an inch mm-hmm. of well-being. Hello,
someone's calling. KKCR.
The gentleman that was speaking is Stephen Jenkinson.
And his major book is called Die Wise.
Stephen Jenkinson.
And his, but tell him that, that his major book is
yeah.
that.
That was a little YouTube short that we were playing on the air earlier. So, yeah. J-E-N-K.
K-E-N. S-I-N.
S-I-N, yeah.
Something like that.
Well, thank you. All right, have a good day. Bye.
Someone was listening?
Somebody was listening! No, I'm just kidding. Wow. He wanted to look that up and catch it again.
I know, I think he is an amazing voice of our time.
Yeah.
Because he has kind of taken everything that we learned mm-hmm. for the decades we've been learning it into a
mm-hmm.
another reality.
I like it because it's not that it's not the woo woo.
No, it's not at all.
It's not. I mean,
he has a PhD from Harvard Divinity School.
Oh, cool!
And he's he's a tremendous scholar. He worked, I'm not sure what hospital in that part of the world.
Yeah,
and managed the whole death and dying thing. So no, he's not even the least bit woo-woo. He's very intelligent
and down to earth,
academic. And his most famous book is called Die Wise.
Ah.
And that's the book. It's hard to get through, but it says some profound things.
Oh gosh, you know what? I tried to read it.
Yeah.
I tried to read it. And it's so wordy that I needed like a notebook and some other things to read it because I needed to write it down. It was really profound.
He's better on YouTube.
Yeah, I like it better on YouTube. Well, we have a little clip of Timothy Leary's that we're going to play. Let's listen to him. This is him he's found out that his diagnosis. And he's having a conversation with Ram Dass in this, which he commonly did. But here we go, Timothy.
Leary announced to the world media that he'd been diagnosed with inoperable prostate cancer. He was dying.
It's shocking that people are not expected to talk about their dying or to plan it. Certainly, the greatest adventure, celebration of your life should be the process of moving on.
He turned it into a theater piece. He turned it into a poem. He turned it into a dance, which is just what he did with all the rest of his life. It was a celebratory moment.
Living's a team sport. Dying's a team sport. He opened to new ideas. Remember when people used to say that LSD is an escapist drug?
Yeah, I understand.
You know, one thing, LSD is dangerous because you can't escape.
Confrontation.
You got 100 billion neurons.
Yeah, I understand.
Yeah. And death, my thing about death is not escaping it. I'm running towards Miss Death. You can't turn this over to the doctors. You can't turn it over to the priests. You can't turn it over to the medical profession. Think for yourselves.
No government agency or no profession can solve these problems for you. I've got to do it for myself, you've got to do it for yourself, and all the viewers have got to do it for themselves.
Take charge of it. Plan it. Talk to your friends about it.
And Timothy's telling us to take charge of it.
Yep.
Plan it. Don't just leave it up to everybody else to make those decisions
like you said,
for you.
Get a bottle of champagne.
Celebrate
and
it.
And celebrate it.
Yep.
Thank you, Timothy.
You know, and again, it's him thinking about tomorrow when they've told him tomorrow might not come.
Not might not.
Well, or yeah, eventually tomorrow won't
That's
be coming.
That's the hope thing. Oh, maybe they'll have it tomorrow.
Nope. Creeping back up on us. Well,
hope-free.
Hope-free, so you're not hopeless.
Or hopeful.
Or hopeful. Well, I hope everybody does have a good weekend. And I hope everybody had a fruitful Thanksgiving. And, you know, maybe we won't hope. We'll just not stop. That's what we can do.
Thinking about tomorrow.
There you go. You guys have a great weekend. On that note...